Welcome to the new season of the Live Your Spa Life show. The Spa and Spa Life stands for Seek Power Always, that divine power within you to do what you're here to do. The theme for this season is intentional living. Amazing people like you share ways to live by design and with purpose to ensure that this short ride of life occurs with choice, physically, financially, spiritually, and in your relationships to create a world-class life. In these times of uncertainty, it's time for you to move past the distractions and start trusting yourself more through your God-given knowingness. No one truly knows better what's best for you than you. In this season, you'll have plenty of examples of people choosing their best life and creating a positive impact through intentional living. Thank you for sharing your precious time with us and being part of the Live Your Spa Life conversation. With us today is Janet Hogan. At 48, she was a 6-times entrepreneur, had it all except the one thing she spent her entire life chasing, a deep contentment that comes from knowing your true calling. It was a near-death experience that provided the breakthrough that she was looking for. Instead of seeing the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, she heard a voice saying, "Janet, you've let everyone down." In that second, she knew what that meant. What she thought was selfless sacrifice looking after her family and chain of businesses was, in fact, selfishness. She had denied herself and the world her greatest gift as a teacher. From that moment, healing the pain of the unexpressed life became her great mission. 10 years later, the process to have the life you want was born. Janet, welcome to the show.
It's a real pleasure to be here, Diane. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Well, I love how you talk about, you know, just really looking at pain. And what do you see when you see emotional pain in other people?
Usually it comes across as one of the classic symptoms like anxiety or stress or just not being present. Probably the thing that most people talk about is inability to be present. So it might show up that you're at an event where you should be happy, like a family birthday party, but most of you is not there. You're there in body, but not in awareness, not in mind. And you're thinking of something else. So it's almost like your mind has been hijacked by some kind of saboteur, and you don't know what to do. So it shows up as a state of, I would say, mental and emotional imprisonment.
Yeah, I totally see that. So I know that a lot of times, you know, going through the process, you know, pain can show up. Fear can show up. There's a lot of things that kind of can divert us in what we're doing. So how do you move past fear by contemplating what would happen if you let fear win?
Well, yeah. So can I share a nightmare that I used to have, one of those recurring nightmares as a kid, and maybe that can explain what the process of fear and allowing fear to win looks like. So I don't know if you recall, Diane, there used to be a series on TV called Lost in Space. Were you ever one of the kids watched that? It was a black and white show. And I remember every episode featured a different type of monster. That was the fascination. And the scariest monster for me was the mummy. So it was like something that had come from an Egyptian tomb wrapped in bandages. And the worst part, it had no face. It had no features. That seemed to make it really scary. And in the TV series, it used to just hang outside the spaceship. So it was always there, but never able to be confronted. So as a young child, I watched this show, and then I had this recurring nightmare. I'd wake up in my bed, and this mummy would be scraping up our driveway, the driveway of our suburban home in Sydney, Australia. And I could have dove under the covers or tried to run away. But instead, what I would do in my nightmare was get out of bed, walk into the backyard and greet the mummy. And we would sit down on the steps, the concrete steps outside our kitchen. And I would say to the mummy, "Why are you doing this? You don't have to kill us. It'll be okay. You know, what's the point of killing me and our family?" So I started having this conversation. And then I would wake up and I would feel like this terrible coward that I hadn't killed it. I thought my job was to kill the monster. So fast forward 40 years or 50 years, I'm 63 now, I realized that what that was a confrontation, if you like, with our shadow self. And The mummy is just a metaphor for our fear. We all have a different type of monster lurking in our subconscious. And so the job that we need to do is sitting on that concrete step next to the thing that we fear the most within ourselves that we haven't confronted, is just to be with it. So how I complete that nightmare scenario is to just reach out and touch that mummy and feel the bandages under my fingertips and realize that it's not that scary, he's not killing me. And then even notice that the bandages are starting to loosen a little bit and pull on those bandages, start to unpeel what's behind all of this. And if we do that, what I realized was that beneath the bandages wasn't all the gore and blood and stuff that we're scared of. It was actually light, just light coming through. And when we can allow that light to appear, that's the unknown self. That's our shadow self. And that's what actually belongs within us. So that's what I would say about fear. Sit with it, explore it, welcome it, see what the light is behind that fear.
Well, you know, we've got to experience, you know, just globally, especially the last few years, there's been so much propaganda around fear, right? And the unknown fear and what could happen and people kind of reacting from that place. What, you know, as you take those experiences and looking at being able to translate your own life and nightmares and being able to see what's behind those things, with that in mind, what scares you most about the world today?
The fact that we blame everything that seems to be wrong with our lives on external factors, and we create division. So let's just say that while we don't own that inner monster, which isn't a monster at all, it's just light, while we don't own it, while we don't become whole, we project what's unhealed in ourselves outside. And so that shows up in war. We're seeing that at the moment between over in Israel. We see that in our political system. The divide itself shows up in so many external conflicts, and particularly we see it in increasing suicide in youth, where we have not simply done the work to understand that part of our mission as human beings is to confront our fear. That's like the hero's journey, and that's what brings us to wholeness. While we don't do that, and no one is to blame here because we haven't been taught how, certainly our education system hasn't taught us, then we're going to live in this state of suffering. And, yeah, I see that everywhere.
Yeah, I totally see that. You know, there's so many different things. I love the distinction between the external world and you know, going back to that personal responsibility and knowing that we get to co-create our experience, and the people around us, the way we view things can be totally different. And so, you know, that's why whatever's going like emotionally within us, for one person, they can identify it as anxiety and another person can identify it as excitement, right? It depends on your come to place. So, you know, there's so much happening in the world. You know, what is just like one change you'd like to see in that? I mean, do you think that there are things that just from your perspective of what you'd like to see change?
Well, what I would like to see change is that we are taught that pain is actually an asset, not a liability. So if we're feeling, and so often physical pain is really just a symptom of an emotional pain that hasn't been attended to. Mm-hmm. So if we can start to go, oh, I'm in a slump, I'm feeling depressed, I'm anxious, rather than saying, please help me, save me from myself, say, this is my system trying to speak to me and say there's something that needs to be attended to. So pain, however that shows up for us, and it can a typical symptom could be distraction. So what is the pain behind the distraction? What are we running away from? If we can start to become curious. So the one thing I think, Diane, I would love to see is curiosity rather than fear around emotional pain. Mm-hmm. And an education system that teaches us to go within that pain, to do a deep dive into that pain, it will inevitably lead us to an unhealed childhood wound. And then an education on how we address that, how we heal that wound, because that's the first part to becoming whole. And here's the thing, people talk about purpose, what's my purpose? And I think one of the issues with why we might want to check out permanently is a sense of nihilism. What's the point? You know, the world would be a better place without me. So to understand that pain actually gives us our purpose. So for example, I spent most of my life behind a desk doing work that I wasn't passionate about just because I could, and chasing the carrot of money like all of us did and all of us are still doing. And instead realizing that that pain of that I had to confront in myself, this fear that I was nothing, and this pain of self-betrayal, which is my pain, where we bury ourselves alive because we don't know who we are, not realizing that we've got something special to offer the world, every one of us. So that becomes our purpose. So I don't want anyone to have to hear those words, oh, you've let everyone down. So that's my calling, if you like. If I can help people not have to hear those words as I did, because the pain of that was, it was a dagger to the heart. You know, all my life working so hard and this is what I get at the end of it. You know, so we don't want to hear that. So if I can help people come to their sense of calling and purpose sooner rather than later, then that fulfills me. That's what gets me out of bed. But everyone has their own brand of pain. And behind that pain lies a sense of purpose. We just have to be able to unearth it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. They say that, you know, in your mess, you find your message, because your unique journey of what you experience and what you're doing gives us those indicators. I'm thinking of a friend of mine who's in the wellness space. And a lot of times she looks at, instead of looking at the ailments and diagnosis, look at, you know, why is it there in the first place, right? Go back to seeing what that is. And our emotions give us those clues, right? If we are feeling distressed, or we're feeling fear, or we're feeling like, you know, we don't matter in the world, if we really just take a moment and dive beyond that, we can really look at, like, there's something in there for us. And when we look at that, you know, how it's happening for us versus to us, that is those, some of those distinctions that can really matter. And that being said, you know, is there anything that you would want to do in the world today that if you had a ripple effect, like just centuries down the world, that you could see, what would that look like?
Would look like my vision for the world is, because I've run 6 businesses, and that is not a boast, that is a confession that says I had no self-awareness, is to turn work into play. So rather than have this system where it feels like self-sacrifice, you know, oh, I've got to, you know, do the daily grind, that's wrong. Why have we done that to ourselves? Instead, to see a world where we actually know ourselves at a deep, deep level, a profound level, that monster, that zombie that was walking up my driveway, that was a state of numbness. That's the state I lived in. That zombie was me. I was going to work as a zombie every day of my life. And I think that's what about 80% of the population does. 20% reckon they get some joy out of what they do, that they're doing what they were supposed to do. So my vision would be to see those numbers flip around so that the 80% are going, yay, we don't even call it work anymore. We say, I get to play today. You know, see you in the playground. That would be my vision for a better life.
Oh, so great. You know, one of the things, like, our language deceives us, right? And so when we say something like, I have to do this and I have to do that, right? There's an energy behind that versus I get to, and that's that playful energy that you're speaking about. And just the distinction about how we say things, we get to actually bring more of those things into our life. So I think going through that work where you get to really get clear on what your purpose is, what you're passionate about, like, what do you get to do in this world? Then you start having more of those experiences. And I think that, you know, one of the things, as we talk to entrepreneurs here on the show, you people get to see, like, the successes and that you've had all these businesses and things that are working. A lot of times, especially people listening to the show who may be in a downturn in their cycle, or they may be suicidal, or they're maybe not feeling great about where things are in their life. You know, what are some of the things that you don't want to share about your journey or who you are that was really part of that journey?
I think I've laid myself on the slab, Diane. And I ask myself every day, well, not every day, but I ask myself frequently enough, okay, is there anything that I couldn't tell the world about myself? And don't believe there is. Or maybe some, I don't know, playing with my genitals when I was 2 years old. Now that's coming up. But but I feel that the more that we can turn our insides out and share whatever is on is deep in our heart that we don't want to, that's a message to put it out there. You know, as we know about shame, it loves silence and secrecy. It loves rumor and gossip. And so we have to be, if there's something within us that we are deeply ashamed about, to start, you know, perhaps joining a community where we can speak it out, even journaling it, writing it out, getting it outside of our system, putting it out there. And ultimately, usually our deepest shame becomes part of our story. It becomes, wow, I got through this. This is a badge of honor now. This is a scar, not a wound. I talk from the scar now. So, yeah, I remember going to a workshop once, and that was one of the questions that we had to address. What is the one thing you don't want the audience to know about you? And I remember just looking at that group of around 30 people, and I hadn't even really thought about it. And then it just came out. It said, oh, I've spent the last 30 years buried alive. And that was like a confession. It was like, wow, you're so successful on the surface, but inside you're living this life of suffocation. And at that point, as soon as I said it, there was a total emotional collapse. I just started sobbing. And that, of course, was a release. And the healing probably started from that moment of really owning that unlived past.
Yeah. Oh, so beautiful that you allowed yourself to be in that space, right? I think that's probably one of people's, you know, biggest fears is that if I don't hold all this container together of what I'm supposed to be, that I'm going to collapse and I won't be able to get up the next day, right? And so coming from that place and knowing that, you know, there's just one step to be made and start getting clearer and clearer of what that looks like, then you start having clues of how you want to live your life, what's important to you, what's meaningful. And in that process, what frustrates you the most about yourself?
I think I feel a fear of greatness and or intensity the perceived fear that might come with that. And so I can have a tendency to get caught up in the day-to-day, to play small, not delegate enough. And so when we do that, we're committing ourselves to a life of obscurity. And if we are in this space where we are wanting to positively impact the world, we're not going to impact anyone. And that's what's so good about you running podcasts like this, that you give visibility to people. But invisibility, hiding behind all those bandages and not being seen, a faceless creature. That's probably what frustrates me most about myself. And so I see that at my age, there's, the biological clock stopped ticking long ago. There's now a spiritual clock ticking, and it's going, take action, take action, take big moves. And that's what's being required now of all of us, I feel, that don't be scared of your greater self. You know, step up to the plate. You can do it. And you need to do it using the tools that are available to you now, whether it's, you know, giving a talk that not for the sake of giving a talk, but giving a talk because you feel there is a message that needs to be delivered, or writing that book or whatever it is. These are the planks that our society judges impact by, and rising to that level, it's incumbent on all of us. And what I'm realizing is the harder life is playing small. The easier life is just going up there, jumping into the slipstream where life seems to carry you along, and all the people that you need to do the grind work will just come into your space. That seems to be what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a perspective that I have given to my clients, and I use it for myself, is that I believe that we live like three lives. There's your public life, your private life, and then it's your undercover life. And that undercover life is that part that you don't ever want anyone to see, and that you try and hold down. And usually once it sees the light of day, that's where those breakdowns happen. That's where those things happen, because you've been having all these strategies and things that have been around to kind of hold that in place. So, you know, and that comes down to that, you know, self-reflection and getting to know like who you are in the world and what your impact's going to be and what that actually looks like. So what do you think is the most important thing that people need to discover or know about themselves?
I think getting to their core pain point. I actually have a tool called Inner Compass, because coming from advertising, that was probably my formative background, Diane, where I spent 20 years. I'm also a real word nerd. I love words, and I love that quote from the Bible, in the beginning was the word. So that's where I zero in on. I feel that if we can put into language what it is that feels uncomfortable inside us, that's the first point of transformation. Of course, it's an intellectual process, a mental process at that point, but it opens us up to, it's like a portal to our body and our felt self. So out of frustration with doing a lot of work and attending a lot of seminars and workshops and going, does anyone really care about my transformation? There's never been any follow-up. No one's ever said, Janet, did spending $10,000 actually work for you? Do you know yourself better now? So what advertising taught me was that we have to deliver in the space of personal development. It's incumbent on us to deliver an outcome, a tangible outcome. So for me, words make it tangible. So with this tool, what I help people do, there's 150 different words that describe pain in its different forms, and you get to choose your top three. And even just that level of awareness, then you can look pain in the face and go, okay, distraction, I see you. Where are you coming from? Now at least I've got something to work with. So for me, personal development, which can feel like this woolly, intangible thing I must do, but I'll do it next year, I'll do it tomorrow, I'm not going to do it now. I think if we can start to make it more of a process where we have steps that are actionable, we have a beginning, middle, and end, we're starting to get people used to the idea that this is just something that you do as part of your hero's journey. And so, and then part of that is taking action. So that's what I see going forward, is what's necessary to start to make it, maybe it's not easy, but just to make it simple, to give people actionable steps.
You know, I think that and you've probably noticed this as well with some of your clients, is that, you know, when people are in that place where they feel stuck, and it's almost a sense of paralyzed, and they're actually not sure what that next step is. And it's kind of an interesting time that we're in where, and maybe it's because we're on devices a lot more and we aren't having as much like conversation. And it's another reason I really love the podcast, is that, you know, you get to interact. It's just you and me, but also, you know, the listeners are now evaluating things in their life, and they're looking at what's happening and what they're experiencing. It seems that there is, it can be more challenging to actually put an emotion behind what you're feeling. Like, you could just say something like, you know, I'm fine, right? You know, we know when people say I'm fine, what's below that? Is it fear? Is it anger? Is it disappointment? Like, what are those things? And it's almost like some of those detailed words of our emotional state of where we're in can, I think, be really scary, because I think sometimes as a whole, people can feel like they might get stuck in those. So when you find that people are going through these different processes and trying to find out, like, you know, why the heck am I even here? And they're in those places where they're not seeing it yet, how do you help them kind of see the forest before the trees?
Love that question, Diane, and it's so important. So once we have a mental clue, we have a word as to what, you know, it might be self-doubt. That's very, very common. Then what we can do is we just start to open ourselves up. So through what I would call a conscious visualization, or just becoming aware. So I have a process for doing this. The word gives us the clue to begin with, and we just open ourselves up to that. And then we come from curiosity, and we just allow ourselves to go, okay, how is that showing up in my body, that sense of self-doubt? Where am I feeling that? And start to just, you know, become aware of our body, and we might feel it in our stomach, or we might feel it across our chest, and then just be present with that feeling. It's a feeling of discomfort. So very often it might feel like a constriction across the chest that suggests there's a betrayal of the self going on, because that's our heart. And then if we can start to just sit with that and then go deeper into that and go, okay, asking our intuitive self, okay, is this a pattern? Am I recognizing this? Does this feel familiar? And then just sitting with it. And then from that point going, okay, where have you shown up in my life before? And just sitting with that and just seeing what comes up. And then at that point going, okay, intuitive self, can you take me to the origin point? And it might take us back to a memory that goes way, 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 way back to our childhood. And then at that point, we start to maybe see an event that might have created this, that planted this seed of self-doubt in the first place. So, for example, there was a fellow I was working with, and his three core pain points were stress, worry, and inability to receive. So we went to inability to receive, and we went, how is that showing up? And it took him all the way back to when he was a little boy, and he had a school project to do, and his dad was a traveling salesman, and he said to his dad, Dad, can you help me with my project? And Dad not only helped him, he did the project for him. He thought he was doing the right thing. And the worst part was when he submitted his project, he got an A+. And his teacher said, I want you to stand in front of the class, Jimmy, and show the class this amazing thing that you've done. And this poor little boy felt so much shame at that point. He didn't dare tell anyone that his dad had done it for him. So at that point was this seed of, I can't do it on my own. And so how did he show up in his life? I must do everything on my own. That led to divorce, led to estrangement from his children, led to having to do everything on his own. So when someone offered to help, no, I'm going to do it on my own, inability to receive. So then that was impacting him financially as well. So just by starting to do that deep dive and going, okay, how do we turn inability to receive into something that's going to, what's the light at the back of that? So I won't go through all the permutations, how we got there, but where it came to was faith in others. And so now his purpose, if you like, is to come from this place of pain where he couldn't trust others to a place where I have faith in you, I believe in you. And that's really what now he says to his clients, I believe in you. And it comes from his heart because he knows the pain of not believing in others and feeling he had to do everything on him by himself. And that pain informs his purpose.
Mm.
So that's just an example of how that works.
Yeah, great example. You know, since you used an example of one of your male clients, why do you think men need more support in the world these days?
I think women, and rightly so, have the mic right now for all the reasons that you and I are aware of. But in the process, it's almost like how we work, and this goes back to that conversation around division, that there are goodies and baddies. And I feel that even the words toxic and masculinity put together start to give a default position of, you know, if you're a white male and you're over a certain age, then you are inherently bad and you are to blame for all the problems in the world. We know that's not true. We can't, the minute we finger point, we know that there's something we're not owning in ourselves. But the problem is men don't feel that they're in a position to really talk about that. So they sit in silence and they suffer. And I don't tend to see genders differently. I just see people in states of suffering. I think we all carry some suffering. You know, that expression, man up, tells a man that he does have to do things on his own. He does have to isolate himself. And men have a capacity, probably more so than women, to compartmentalize. And they go, okay, so I'm not talking to my ex-wife anymore. I'll just put her in a box. I'm not talking to my children anymore. I'll put them in a box. Let's focus on my work. And so they imprison themselves in this state of solitary confinement. And so from there, when they retire, where they think maybe happiness happens when I retire and I don't have to do the daily grind, and that's where we see the death rate of men over, you know, 50, 60 accelerating at an alarming rate. We're also seeing a generation of boys coming through who don't have strong male role models, and they're not in a good place either. So I feel that with most of my clients are men, if I can get them to a place of heartfelt awareness, then I also see when they're in those leadership positions, there's a trickle-down effect where they can positively influence the lives of all the others that they're working with, that they can impact. So, I just feel that right now men need a lot of help. And once again, I think a lot of what we do comes from personal experience. So my dad was one of those men, and he was actually this amazing doctor. So he did the first cochlear implant in a baby in the world, and he was known as Dr. Ears. But that's all he had. And when he retired, he just sat on the couch and read old copies of the Australian Medical Gazette. And his death started at that moment. And I saw him, he was so happy to check out when the prostate cancer took over and the pain and the cancer went to his bones. He was so happy to leave. And that was 20 years ago. And today, my mum and I still talk about him. Who was that man? Who was that man that was so wonderful on one level and such a mystery on another? And we'll never get him back, and we'll never be able to answer those questions. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important. You know, I love that you mentioned that, is that, you know, having purpose, right? And, you know, for men, it's like those P words, having, you know, purpose and being productive and being, you know, a provider. Like those are some innate qualities that, you know, men get to choose how they're going to be in the world. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of media type things that label that as toxic masculinity, or, you know, it's a very narrow view. Whereas my experience with, you know, men that I've seen, that they want to have impact, they want to be in that role, they want to expand in that. So, you know, I like to see more of a turn and trend of men standing in their masculinity, of what that is, you know, of, you know, having fathers who are present, you know, doing meaningful work. I mean, we get to choose, you know, as you said from the very beginning here, about if we're leading these lives of quiet desperation, right? We're not getting our voice out. We're not actually living in the way that we live. You know, there's another side to that coin. There's a way that we can, you know, unravel some of that, unpack it. And, you know, if you're still breathing, you still have time, right? You can still make those shifts and those changes, which is a beautiful thing that we can do. And I think that we can create the experiences that we want to have. We can really set ourselves up to succeed, and look at some of the things that we may label as mistakes are really just things that allowed us to make better decisions that actually come into the equation, which reminds me, one of the things I always love to ask my guests, because we do get to create our life, is that, you know, how we live in our bedroom versus our kitchen or our office are very different. And so what is your favorite room in your home and why?
Oh, well, I'm very lucky. I live in Bali and we live in the middle of a jungle. And so my favorite room is actually an outdoor space. So we have a terrace with a roof, a glass roof, and we have jungle all around us and a river running through our property. And so I like sitting there with a cup of coffee and my darling husband, and we talk about deep stuff. And we live parallel lives for most. Our marriage was dysfunctional for most of the time. And it was only when we started opening up and being vulnerable, and he is a man, I think this is part of the, for a man to own his masculinity, he first has to own his femininity. And by that, I don't mean going, becoming more female. What I mean is opening up to, like that that fellow I was telling you about, inability to receive. Receiving is the feminine. Men have not been taught how to receive. They give, give, give. I'm the provider. It's very, you know, it's very pragmatic, very, I have to do stuff, not be. So for a man to just be and be with himself, that's a big leap. And my husband and I are both learning that together. So I've got a bit of toxic masculinity in me too. So I'm a bit of a human doing on steroids. So this is not just men who might have toxic masculinity. Women can too. And so we're both learning together at this stage in our lives to just sit and be with nature and just go, oh, there was a butterfly, or look at that snail eating our plants. Isn't he beautiful? And just starting to be present. Yeah, that's a journey for both of us.
I love it. Well, Janet, I know that people are going to want to stay in contact with you. How can they best do that?
Well, I have a website, janethogan.com. The first thing you'll read is Get Unstuck Here. So we talk about that. If you're interested in doing this inner compass work, you just have to scroll down and there's a link and you can do that exercise and start to see your pain and start to reconsider pain as maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's an asset, and see it as a portal to a bigger life. And I'm happy to help anyone who wants to see what that journey looks like.
Wonderful. And as you know, our theme for this season is intentional living. In what way are you living an intentional life now?
Well, for the first time in my life, it's taken a long time, Diane. It's been probably a 40-year journey to get to this point. I'm finally doing what I love. So I am being playful. I am in that creative space, and I wouldn't swap it for anything. I'm probably still working the same hours, but it doesn't feel like work anymore. And so, just showing up, doing this, helping people get through their pain to the other side. That feels like intentional living to me.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing your wisdom and your journey.
It's just been a pleasure. And thank you for asking such thought-provoking questions. It's been, it's been fun on this side of the camera as well. Thank you.
Oh, you got it. Thank you. And for our listeners out there, you know, as you look at your journey, you know, where are you on that? You know, are you, you know, forcing life as it is? Are you feeling that work, all these have to's? You know, really look at the other coin of what Jan and I have been talking about here today. What do you get to do? How do you get to be more playful? And a lot of people think of peace as being boring, right? But peace is actually where you can just set into your soul and really look at why are you actually here? And taking that few minutes of contemplation, doing some deep breathing, doing some introspective work, you know, on your own and also with, you know, coaches and consultants, you know, feel free to reach out to either one of us. We're happy to support you in your journey. And until we connect again, live your spa life. Bye for now. Bye-bye.